It is indeed the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Guillermo Mash on behalf of the Without a Roof radio program. And you are indeed listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Also, be aware that opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Give me 2 eggs. So, tomorrow I got nothing.
We believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. Guillermo Mash here for the Without a Roof radio program. Thank you for joining us here on KZFR 90.1 FM. And before we get into the main crux of our program today, which is life on the Upper Ridge communities of Concow and Yankee Hill during a pandemic and after the campfire, I thought a wonderful place to start would be this conversation that started from a prompt with Jesse Olson, a veteran and a operations volunteer with Team Rubicon. And Jesse's also someone that has moved up on the ridge, I believe, 6 years ago. So when she speaks about being, you know, a new person up on the ridge and then someone that people can trust, this is an experience that she's had. But I think this gives you a good understanding of life in Concow Yankee Hill on People Power Radio.
Well, you know, a lot of people move out into the countryside and the mountains because it's less expensive to live there. But a lot of other people move out here because, you know, this is the country and that's where they want to be. And they're, you know, it takes a different kind of breed of folks to live out in the countryside. And, you know, for the most part, a lot of us are out here because we are independent people. We like to do things on our own. Even those who live out here because it's less expensive to live here because they prefer to do things themselves and not rely on others. So it's a little different living out here and living in poverty than it is living in the city, especially when you don't have as many supports here. I mean, we've got one little market and one restaurant that's open or has been open seasonally in the past, and that's it. Gas is more expensive here, groceries are more expensive here, and you can't get everything that you need. And then you do have to drive quite a ways, you know, 35 miles or so into town and back to get anything else that you might need. Transportation is a problem. There's no public transportation. Many people don't even own a vehicle, and if they do, the vehicles they own may not be reliable. So, you know, poverty has a different face in the countryside. And especially when, like an area like Concow and Yankee Hill, you've suffered from many traumas, like fires. We've had 3 fires in the last 20 years. The campfire in 2018, and the Lightning Complex fires in 2008, and the Poe fire in 2001, all of which wiped out the community and destroyed many homes. Some people have lost their homes 3 times in that period. Insurance is hard to come by. If you are renting, you know, now you're living in a mobile home, you've got to, or even a tent or a car, you have to find another place to stay. There aren't any rentals, so you may be camping out on somebody else's property and hoping to find a rental once things rebuild. Folks who are independent are less likely to ask for help. It's even more of an issue after having survived multiple traumas like these fires, because we are in an unincorporated community. And in an unincorporated community, we have less government involvement in our recovery. So we don't have a mayor out here. We don't have any government directly above us. We have the county, but you know, they're not as heavily involved in our community. So when something like the campfire occurs, there's not as much immediate assistance to our community as there was to Paradise, for example. So we may be crying out for help, but the help isn't coming, at least not immediately. And eventually people stop asking for help. I mean, with those three fires I was talking about, you know, three fires in such a short amount of time, we've kind of seen the writing on the wall. We understand that it's just not coming, and we've got to do it ourselves. We have to expect to do it ourselves. So when somebody does come in and offer assistance, we got to look at that a little suspiciously, because we've come to realize that those who do come to offer assistance, they tend to not offer the assistance that's either needed or wanted, or it may be, they may have ulterior motives. You have a whole community here that is not just a community in poverty, but a community in trauma. And the community is reacting from repeated trauma, experienced trauma upon trauma upon trauma.
And Without a Roof radio program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Mountain Sports, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, cross-country skiing, camping, and just enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports is located in downtown Chico at 176 East 3rd Street, and due to the coronavirus, they are available by appointment only. Call them 345-5011. Also made possible by Bankruptcy Law Offices of Michael O'Hayes, a proud supporter of community radio. Michael O'Hayes offers consultations for Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies for residents of Northern California and has been doing so for over 30 years. The telephone number for Michael O'Hayes, spelled H-A-Y-S, is 892-8916, or look him up online, mhayslaw.com. Welcome to the May 13th, 2020 edition of the Without a Roof radio program on KZFR 90.1 FM, your people-powered community radio since 1990. Guillermo Mash here with a doozy of a show, focusing on the Samaritans, loving on folks, weathering the pandemic in Concow and Yankee Hill, with on-location interviews with Jesse Olson, operations lead for Team Rubicon's twice-weekly door-drop food deliveries, Alyssa Nolan Kane, founder of Tiny Houses for Campfire Survivors, Jenny Lowry, founder of From the Ground Up on the twice-weekly fresh organic food giveaways at the Yankee Hill Hardware Store, along with Amelia Erickson, the frontline organizer of the program on location at the Yankee Hill Hardware Store. Terry and John Rubilo from IM's Garden, a bustling haven of mutual aid, love, and support, providing meals and a whole lot more in Concow, California. Terry says IM Garden serves up to 1,300 to 1,500 people a month. Sending some big honking congratulations and gratitude to our local mutual aid groups participating in the Chico Homeless Encampment Outreach Program under the guidance and direction of True North Housing Alliance. Shareable.net just published a 30-minute audio story titled The Response, Resisting COVID-19 with Mutual Aid in Chico, California. Head to shareable.net, that's shareable.net, and take a listen. And tune to the Without a Roof radio program next week as we air the episode with testimonies of gratitude by community members. As regular listeners know, the Homeless Encampment Outreach Team has played a critical role in keeping our waterways and parks clean and safe during the COVID-19 shelter-in-place for the Chico houseless community. The city just dropped three dumpsters to assist them in their cleanup efforts. The locations are Tekrit Ponds, Comanche Creek, and Windchime Park. This is in addition to a dumpster placed under the 99 overpass in Lower Bidwell Park. The news on hand washing and porta potties is less favorable, with nothing new to report on additional drops. I spoke this morning with Joy Amaro, the Homeless Solutions Coordinator for the City of Chico, regarding the outreach team request for sanitation drops under the 99 overpass for campers in the general area, which recently spiked as people sought shelter from the rain. The back of Comanche Creek, Humboldt and Orient, and adding another porta potty at the downtown Farmers Market parking location. These recommendations are based on concentration of campers and how far the nearest public toilet is. California Public Health and Sanitation Code 8397.4 defines requirements of one toilet per 15 people for employees, with a scale going up to 16 to 35 needing two restrooms. Every location mentioned meets the 16 to 35 criteria, irrespective of distance from the bathroom. A lot of these folks are walking, would have to walk a half a mile or more, or 300 yards if they're lucky. Frankly speaking, the city has no valid reason to deny these modest requests in light of the closure of business bathrooms due to the statewide shutdown and is shirking the sanitation responsibility that has arisen during the COVID-19 emergency. These requests would be temporary facilities until the emergency shelter in place is lifted. We would like concerned listeners to consider airing their support for these additional sanitation drops by emailing Eric, that's spelled E-R-I-K, Gustafson, G-U-S-T-A-F-S-O-N, who is the Chico Fleet Manager at the Department of Public Works, via email at Eric, E-R-I-K, dot Gustafson at chicoca.gov. A quick Google search for Gustafson, city of Chico, will pull up his contact information as well, including his phone contact info. On to our on-location coverage of Concow and Yankee Hill, and there's no better way to start our coverage on the Upper Ridge than hearing from Terry and John Rubio with IM's Garden, recorded on location in Concow, Saturday, May 9th and Mother's Day, May 10th, here on KZFR 90.1 FM, Big Pot Radio. All right, Guillermo Mash here for KZFR 90.1 FM. I'm here with Terry and John at IM's Garden up here in Concow. And it's just wonderful to be up here, Terry. Thank you for being on KZFR.
You're welcome.
What do we need to know about all the wonderful Samaritan work that's going on here, helping to feed people during these times?
Mostly that we're able to do this because there's so many wonderful people from multiple states bringing stuff here for this community. Yeah. It's not just us. We're just sort of a distributions point for people to come to.
When you say this, we're able to do this, maybe give us some detail on what this is.
Well, we cook meals, we have a donation for food, clothing, diapers, just about anything that needs. People can come here and say, Terry, can you get a hold of, and I have somebody I can get a hold of, whether it's furniture or a camp stove or a tent, you know. What we've even helped people get, you know, trailers to stay in and stuff. We've had vehicles donated that we've passed on, or just kind of a little bit of everything, including ears. We just listen a lot.
Well, how does your meal program work?
6 days a week. We take Saturday off. Dinner is every day. If somebody shows up and they're shopping and they're hungry, we'll make them a sandwich or pancakes or whatever. But dinner's 6 days a week, and we deliver to quite a few of our seniors or the housebound on the mountain.
That's why this is kind of a good time. So we're here on your day off. Thank you for being on the radio on your day off.
You're welcome.
What's the most beautiful thing for you and your partner, John, as far as, you know, the work you do here?
Being able to do it. Mm-hmm. Literally. We get blessed so many different ways. It's unbelievable. I've met some of the most incredible people that I'll be lifetime friends with that I never would have met otherwise.
So maybe for our listeners, because we don't get up to Concow enough. I left Con up here. It's just wonderful. Maybe if you could kind of paint the picture for folks that don't get up here as often or maybe never been up here, on what some of the challenges are in the community and how you're helping to fill that need.
The closest town is a half hour away. We do have a small like mom pop store and a little hardware store that up here, but most of us are still in trailers. I lost my home, most everybody I take care of, and most of us are still in trailers. So we can't go shopping like we used to and fill up a freezer and get through the month. We're every 2 to 3 days. And most people are either on fixed incomes, lost their jobs, different reasons that they don't have the ability anymore to be able to provide food for themselves. And so that's one of the nice things about having the donation center, is that we're able to help fill in and meet the needs of the community.
How much do you think you give away on a monthly basis for some of the survival stuff, like clothing and food and any ideas?
Oh, Lord. Truckfuls, literally. Okay, just for the donation tent, I have people that bring me canned goods and non-perishables in their vehicles, and then I also will go and spend right at $2,000 a month to keep things stocked. There's other places like Gleaners helps, Feed America helps. That's where I was this morning. He's unloading the truck. Several of the people with smaller, their own private gardens will pick and bring up here. We take care of kids to our seniors, roughly about 1,300 to 1,500 people a month.
So it seems like it might happen as far as the drop-offs, kind of like what Jesse Olson and I are doing. I've got like 40 pounds of red onions, and she's got, you know, dozens of pounds of carrots. We're just going to drop them off, and then you're going to give them out, huh?
That's how it works here, yes. And I'll show you in a little bit our donation center, where you'll see there really is a bit of everything or anything they might need, from paper products to food.
All right, Don, Terry's going to show us around. I'm going to try to do the visual. We're underneath an overhang with plants. What do we got here, Terry?
Okay, well, these are actually mine. He just picked those up for me to replant. But this stuff here, the few vegetables you see, there was a lady that started a vegetable garden and then was not able to plant it, and so she brought it up for the community. So we've been giving this away. And we have refrigerators, freezers, that's community for when we get like milk or stuff like that in. They can use the washer and dryer. Wood's being milled right now to build an outside shower house, but they use the shower in our trailer if they need to right now. And
well, here we are in the clothing area.
Well, sort of the everything area.
Everything area.
Yes. And the diapers and that good stuff is coming in tomorrow.
Got a lot of bread. Bread is
that came in
going
today. Yeah. This was empty after 3 days. It looked like this, and that was filled up there. And this was completely empty in 3 days.
Now, how big is this footprint? I'm thinking 20 by 20, is it?
Yeah, this here is a 20 by 20.
Okay.
And someone, actually, the Gleaners donated funds for a metal garage, which is where we're turning in the permit information, hopefully on Monday. And then this will be replaced with a nice building.
This looks like a well-constructed DIY. Is that what we got right here?
Okay, what happened was, not this Easter, but the Easter before, a lady named Heidi from the Bay Area donated the tent. And so we had a smaller tent that we had started in. She got the bigger one. The very first snow collapsed all the framing. So my husband and a couple of his friends came in and did this to get us through till we can get the building built. So it's working pretty good at the moment.
It's very well built. This is a very well built frame.
He built the frame, yes, my husband. And they actually put it into the ground, so, because it gets pretty darn windy. It's not right now, but it gets pretty windy up here.
Somebody donates something, you just thank them and figure out where it needs to go, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And what I can't use here, or, you know, that I know is not going to move, I'll put to use for a dinner.
And you even got books. Everyone needs books, children's books, all sorts of books, plates.
And then we've got back stock here to put out on the shelves. So we have the 20 by 20, and then we have this huge tarp over the top of that. And they're actually attached to great big metal I-beams on the outside to keep it from blowing. And then we put our extra stuff, as you can see, back behind there. And then we bring it out as we need it.
You got diapers and some shoes.
We got shampoos. We get foot wash. We've got cough medicine.
So this was the main operation we just looked at.
Yep, that's the donation center itself. And then over here, the lady that builds the tiny houses donated a toy box that two of my friends worked with her, and they converted it into a kitchen only for me to cook with.
Here we are.
My kitchen.
This is what the tiny house person donated?
Uh-huh.
The one out of Orville? I think her name's Elisa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she seems like she's doing wonderful work.
She's awesome. She is really awesome. But anyways, so refrigerator, freezer, stove.
You're listening to an on-site recording with Terry Rubilo, co-founder and Operation Maestro, for an amazing Samaritan Oasis of Love and Hope for 1,300 to 1,500 community members a month from their Conco location in Butte County. Terry smiled when I told him my religion is the red verses and interjected, "It's not about religion, it's about relationships." Amen that, Terry. Next up is her husband, John, a rugged man who is the fix-it, build-it, make-it-so force behind their Christ-centered mission in the midst of the campfire burn scar. When Terry says IM's garden is the ears of the community, she certainly had John in her heart. John and I had a chance to talk a bit after his interview, which helps solidify my observation of John's attentiveness. John is a listener. As I was commenting, the next time someone tells you people are homeless by choice, simply ask them why only poor people make that choice. His head was nodding and his eye contact was all about taking in what I had to say. Afterwards, he had this gem. "Yeah, and when I started in construction, we were building 1,000 square foot homes, and when I retired, it was closer to 3,000. John gets it, and then some. What could you tell us about what all the good that happens here, John, and how fortunate you are to be part of it?
Well, just as an example, a young lady, desperate need of certain products, embarrassing products, but and we were able to come through for her. We're miles from any town, and just the look on her face was like, "Oh, thank God!" You know, and that's it there in a nutshell.
That's an amazing thing when you give people something that seems so the simple things. My mom's favorite quote is, "Live simply, so others may simply live." And when you can give someone the simplest of things, it's amazing how happy they are, huh?
Nice. Yes. Yeah. Well said.
But what's your favorite thing about the work that you do here, or the volunteer stuff, the Samaritan things you do here, John?
Oh, that'd be my wife.
Yeah. You're the ops guy? You're the guy that built the frame for the you did a good job on that.
Maybe we'll get a roof someday here.
Yeah? So you got people coming saying, "I need this," then you've got Terry going, "Hey, John, I need you to do this," and you're the fix-it guy, the make-it guy?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Everyone needs a John.
Yeah. They need one that's not broken.
More ways than one. Everyone needs a John. What would be your message of hope, John, for our community?
Trust in God. What? In Jesus' name, ask for all things. You believe and it will be given unto you. And that's it in a nutshell. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, John, for all that wisdom and kindness in your heart. Next up, we had a chance to go back to IAMS the very next day, Mother's Day 2020. And had some wonderful on-site interviews with a few folks that use the services at IAMS. The first interview you'll hear is Ernie. And Ernie just had this, "I'm here, I'm going to keep on living" look around him. But he was dusty. He looked tired. But he had just a bounce in his step and a will to, you know, be present. And you could immediately tell. So conversations going back and forth between Terry and him that, you know, he felt really welcome. He felt really respected, and the respect went both ways. And I also had a wonderful chance to talk to another mom. You really enjoy this interview with the mom. Kind of gives you a good insight into the love and care of IAMS, in that this woman actually was boarding a horse and trading time and, you know, helping out around the property. And I just could sense a feeling of relief when she came in. And she had a nice little funny way about her, too. I had asked her, you know, about how things are going and for her and what are the wonderful things happen at the IAMS. And she smiled and she said, "Well, I was down in their dungeon last night." And that was probably the biggest laugh we got on the porch at IAMS Garden. And then we'll end the interview with some information around how to connect with IAMS Garden. And I always love ending with a message of hope. And we'll hear that from Terry. And then we'll transition to our interview with Alyssa Nolan Kane with Tiny Homes for Campfire Survivors here on People Power Radio. I'm here. Your name's Ernie, right?
Right.
Nice to meet you, Ernie. And you're here getting some love and some care and some food and supplies from IAMS Garden. Tell us, community of listeners here, how important the services are that you get here.
All these people are quite a godsend. They feed us every day, clothe us. They're always here for us, and excellent to have in the community.
How long you been coming here, Ernie?
Well, since the fire, well, I've been coming here for years, since the 80s.
But, yeah, they've been doing a meal here that long then, huh? Since like the 80s?
Oh, the meals?
Yeah.
No, they've been doing probably about 5 years.
Yeah.
Before the fire, they were feeding people. Now they just have the giveaway. They have everything.
Yeah.
One-stop shop.
What's the most important thing you think people need to know about the service that people here are providing?
Just to be thankful for it. We need it right now. It's been a while since the fire, but we're still all hurting. We're still all living in trailers. Nobody has their homes back yet, but it's getting better.
You know, she come and how you help out, now you feed and what she does, combined for the family, you know, your family. You get, you know, stuff from here. She's letting you keep your horses here.
I basically got kicked out of the road, kicked out of the truck down the road and with my daughter.
And you're welcome here, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful.
If it weren't for them, I don't know what we'd be doing. You know, they certainly welcomed us into the community and made us feel welcome. And, well, we are welcome. And, you know, I help out around here. It's sometimes if Bob's sick or whatever, I deliver his meals that he drops off. Occasionally I help unload stuff in the tent and feed the horses.
Takes care of my animals for me because I'm short on time. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Good for you. You love animals?
Yeah.
That's a wonderful thing.
My daughter just got a horse about, was it 2 weeks ago now? And she lets us keep it here, so, you know, we just work off the board.
Any closing comments?
If you have an extra nickel, donate it to IAMS.
She cooks. Aunt Terry cooks?
Uh-huh.
What's the favorite thing she cooks? What do you like?
Hamburgers.
Hamburgers. That's what we have today. Nice. What's your name?
Jenna.
And you're 6. Nice to meet you, Jenna.
Hi.
So what could you share with our listeners about the wonderful things that are going on here? And your name real quick. First name's good.
Jeanette. I come up to IAM Gardens and help Terry. She does cooking. She got all kinds of things up here that she gives out to the community. And this lady is wonderful. You guys need to come up and stop by sometime and see her. She's amazing. If you need something, she's the one that come to get it.
I do have a Facebook page that has a donation pool that goes directly into whether we need food, personal hygiene items. Those are the two things that I actually go and buy with the donations. Uh-huh. Pretty much everything else is just a straight. Somebody has brought it to me, and they're welcome to come visit us up here in Concow. 13420 Kirby Creek Road. Off of Concow Road. Can't miss us.
Give us a message of hope, Terry.
And life is good. We're living it, you know. We just roll with whatever comes our way. And if you just learn to enjoy the moment, you can't go wrong.
All right, next up, Alyssa Nolan Kane with Tiny Homes for Campfire Survivors, building little tiny homes for you and me. And always remember, if you have a roof, be grateful.
Well, there's a black man with a black cat living in a black neighborhood. He's got an interstate running through his front yard. You know, he thinks his dad is so good.
All right, Guillermo Mash here for the May 13th, 2020 edition of the Without a Roof Radio program here on your community radio station, KZFR 90.1 FM. At the moment, I'm pleased to have Alyssa Nolan Kane, founder and chief love provider for Tiny Houses for Campfire Survivors, on the phone lines for a pre-record. Welcome to KZFR, Alyssa.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my distinct pleasure, as always. I love talking with folks, and I especially love talking with people that are sheltering folks. So let's start a bit with your background, Alyssa, including your love for sheltering campfire survivors and your deep connection with the Upper Ridge residents in Concow and Yankee Hill.
Yeah, so I lived in Concow for almost 10 years. I got burned out in the 2008 Butte Lightning Complex fire. And I just love Concow. In my heart, it's my home. And I didn't have the availability to move back I moved back after I got burned out, but it was quite some time later. And then I ended up moving down here to Oroville, but Concow is still my home. It's all my favorite swimming spots. It's my favorite community. You know, my family lived there for a long time, over 20 years. And my heart is always to help them. They're so overlooked. And I think the need up there is greater than probably people realize, even though they're a really resilient community.
So why don't you let our listeners know what the impetus was for your project? You know, what made you kind of go, hey, I'm doing this?
Yeah, so when the campfire was going on, you know, I gave food, I gave clothes, but really people didn't need any more used clothes. They didn't even have a place to put them. And I just had this overbearing need to help, and I had a little baby at the time. She was only 5 months old, so I couldn't really take her out in the smoke and, you know, go to the distribution centers or volunteer in that nature. And so the overwhelming need to help would not go away. And I really felt like the Lord was asking me to help, and I just didn't know how. So I sat down in my room and prayed, and I said, Lord, I know you want me to do something, but what would you have me to do? And the Lord really impressed me to build these little houses. And at first, my first response was, what? I don't even have money for that. and the Lord really impressed me. I didn't ask you to finance nothing. I asked you to have faith for it. And when I realized that, I thought, you know what, I could do that. I could believe for that. Because, you know, the housing was such a big deal. And I had never built anything. I didn't know the difference between a drill and an impact driver, but I don't think that ever even occurred to me. And so I launched a social media campaign that night telling people I was going to build 10 tiny homes with all donations and all volunteers, and funded the very first home, though, next day on GoFundMe.
So when you say you funded, why don't you give our listeners a little bit of understanding of how you spin your hope and magic at Tiny Houses for Campfire Survivors, including some details on the anemones of the tiny houses? Because I know they vary dramatically depending on, you know, what your build plans are and your budget.
Yeah, so in the beginning, because they didn't know, I raised $5,000 build. And the builds come in closer to the $10,000 or $12,000 mark. And then how I've learned to bridge that gap is through donations, mostly of building supplies, through businesses here in the community, and then through people. And so we have Don George Roofing. They donate and install all the standing seam metal roofs. Tim's Door Shop, Orville, they donate all custom vinyl doors for all the builds. And then the Price is Right Flooring, Jerry Metcalf, the owner in Chico, he has donated flooring for every single build we've done so far. And then Endeavor Homes has donated windows. River Valley Community Outreach, they give us like 50 to 75% off everything we buy, which really helps stretch our budget. As I find as I've gone along that, I mean, really it takes us a budget of about $7,000 on our end. And then, you know, we still rely on donations to bridge the gap to the finish. But Grimes Heating and Air gets a huge shout out because they donate and install these awesome mini splits for all the homes, and their heater, air conditioners, and dehumidifiers.
So maybe if it's possible, I think this first one's pretty easy, but the footprint of it, you know, the footprint of your tiny house, and if you've used the same floor plan, but as much as it's possible, why don't you just kind of pretend, or maybe have a picture in front of us, and we're going to open the door and walk in and tell us what we see.
Yeah, so each one totally is different because I do design them per family, because I feel like tiny living is not for everybody. So I kind of try to find out from all the survivors, like, can you do stairs? Can you do a ladder for a loft? You know, do you need a tub? Do you need a shower? Do you need a real toilet or a composite toilet? So the one I'm walking into right now, you open the door and there's kitchen cabinets and kitchen counters on both sides. I mean, it has a full sink, double dual induction cooktop. There's microwave, fridge, toaster oven, and then you walk in and I put these little love seats in all of them, and they pull out to be another sleeping area. And then this one also has a full bed downstairs, and there's a shower and a toilet in the bathroom right next to that. And then upstairs in the loft is a pretty good sized sleeping area, and it has a full bed as well. So really you could sleep six people in here if you had to.
Listeners just joining, we are speaking on a pre-record with Alyssa Nolan Kane, founder and chief love provider for the Tiny Houses for Campfire Survivors. And I thought it was so eloquent that you led with such detail about food prep. I think people that haven't experienced what's happened to folks up in the campfire or homelessness or, you know, not having much and not having a lot of space, food prep is a huge deal. Kind of helps lift people's spirits and gives them a place.
Oh, food is love.
Food is love. I like that.
Yeah, and I feel like it. I put these dual induction cooktop burners in the tiny homes that we add a pluggable cord to, so that when they're not in use, instead of being set in the counter, when they're not in use, they can be put away underneath. That way, you know, counter space is prime real estate in a tiny home. And then, you know, we have a wonderful partnership with a nonprofit called Feed My Peep, and they minister one peep at a time with food. So they've partnered with us to send up giant baskets full of food with every house we deliver.
So I'm just got a little thumbnail list of, so it sounds like each unit has water, electricity, heat, it's insulated, it has food, it has storage for physical belongings and for food, and it has beds and a living area and windows and skylight. Was that pretty accurate?
Oh, that's totally accurate. I think one of the things that maybe has got blurred along the years is the definition of a tiny home. And in all actuality, a tiny home is exactly just like a giant stick built, but tiny, right? So a tiny home includes, you know, a bathroom, a full bathroom, and all these things that our regular houses have. And my desire is that, you know, they are getting something that they walk into and they feel loved. And that's why we partner with tons of people to fill it with all new stuff, new toiletries, new pots, new pans, new linens. Because I want them to go in there and know, you know, that they have hope, that people love them, and Jesus loves them.
So what is the standard square footage, and where are you putting these houses? Back on the property of the people in the burn scar, or maybe some detail around that?
Yeah, so all the homes are around 200 square foot, some a little less, some barely more. 220, I think, has been the biggest one that we gave out, and that doesn't include the loft. And then I find that the homes go all over. So most of the people we help weren't owners before. Most of the people we help were renters. And so we found places for some people to park, like in friends and neighbors' yards. And then some of the people saved all their Red Cross and FEMA money because we were building them a tiny home and bought, you know, some raw land. And so I don't call it case management, but we do try to get a whole picture of, you know, what they're going to be dealing with when the tiny home goes there. And then what I do is reach out to our network of helpers and say, hey, you know what, you know, if we could get this donated, or if we could get her this, it would really help their situation. And so far it's worked out really wonderful. The second tiny home we gave away was for a single mom who was going to live off grid. So we were able to get her a composite toilet. She got a wood burning stove in her tiny home. We got her solar panels and an inverter donated. We got some people to volunteer to cut her in a road and a pad, and we got her some gravel donated.
So what's the expectations? I mean, you literally give someone a home, it's theirs to keep. And do they have to pay on it? Or maybe some details around folks that are listening to this going, you know, what are the commitments from the people that move in?
The only thing I ask is that we have a year residency requirement. So after we give you a home, if sometime in that first year you move up, you get a bigger home, you move to a mobile home, something like that, we just ask that you pay the tiny home forward to someone else who's still in need. Once the year passes, it's all theirs. I mean, you know, they can do whatever they want with it. But since I put that requirement into action, it's been such a beautiful thing that four of the families we actually gave tiny homes to ended up getting mobile homes through the mobile home program, and were able to pay their tiny home forward to people still living in their vehicles.
I guess it's a good time then to slip in, you know, how do people get in touch with you that are interested in finding out more?
So there's a couple ways. You can always call me. Everybody has my number. It's 530-720-1199. Or you could email us. It's campfiretinyhomes@gmail.com. And then definitely if you're on Facebook, follow our Facebook page. It's Tiny Homes for Campfire Survivors like us, and you can send us a message through there. And then right now, because of Corona, we can't really take too many volunteers. I'm still here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 9 to 3. Our build site's located in Orville, 1790 Montgomery. And we're always here on those days and times to take donations or anything else, questions, whatever it is.
For listeners just joining, you're listening to the Without a Roof radio program hosted by Guillermo Mash, and we're in the middle of an interview with Alyssa Nolan Kane, the founder and chief love provider with Tiny Homes for Campfire Survivors here on People Power Radio.
The question I talked to you before we turned the mics on, kind of saying, hey, if you've only housed one person, one family, that's a success. But maybe a little bit of detail on just how many tiny houses and tiny homes you've installed for Campfire Survivors, and maybe what the queue looks like.
Yeah, so my goal when I started was 10, and I thought that was big. And then at the end of the first year of us building, we had given away 13 homes in 12 months. And so I was really proud of all the people that helped to make that possible. We still have a little over 400 people on the waiting list, and we fully funded almost 40 homes, and we have 9 under construction right now.
That's so wonderful. Wow.
It's so amazing.
I don't know when your next one is, but I would love to do a ride along and do a little, you know, radio coverage for, you know, one of your installs. That would just fill my heart with joy.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, tiny home moving days. There's not a dry eye in the house.
Yeah. That's how I kind of connected. We had already gone to IAMS, which everyone loves for all the right reasons. And we were delivering food for Team Rubicon, and you went by. I didn't actually see it. I was fiddling with my equipment, I think.
And
Jesse Olson goes, "Oh, tiny house just went by." And it was so appropriate because we'd just come from IAMS and we were out there giving out food. But there's just a whole lot of love and a whole lot of people doing some wonderful things up there. So maybe some closing comments around that, you know, other folks that are doing things on the ridge, and maybe something that we haven't touched upon.
I would just think that, you know, if you still feel like you have this nudge in your heart to help, I would totally reach out and do that to whoever you're going to reach out to, because there's still so much need. So, for instance, in the tiny home we just delivered to Concow, I knew that there was a severe need, but I didn't know the severity of it till I got there. And they had been living without a refrigerator since the campfire. And I had to walk away because I was going to cry, because I'm a mom. I have 3 little kids. And I said, "What have you been eating?" And she said, "Just canned food." I mean, it was a wonderful day delivering the home and being able to make their life a little bit better. But I left coming down the hill and was on a mission just to make their life even more better. And, you know, the only way we do that is we're just a giant network of helpers. I just put the word out, and, you know, somebody had a decent washing machine. Somebody else had a decent dryer. We got an electrician that's going to volunteer their time to go up. And we're a community-built project, and I built it like that knowing that each one of us have gifts and talents that the others don't. But when we put them together, we're able to do something this size. We're able to give people houses. And, you know, it's a vital thing that we need your help.
So it's interesting. It sounds a lot like Terry had said. You know, she's met some of the most amazing people in the world doing what she does, and she's made lifelong friends, and I'm sure the same has happened for you.
Oh, I have formed so many wonderful relationships with these big-hearted people that come out to help. Some of them have become, you know, was some of my best friends, and it has just been a life-changing experience for me. I mean, being able to give someone a new home is just, I mean, it's overwhelming.
give us a smudge of hope for the community members on the ridge.
Oh, people care about you. We're on a mission to house people, and Concow is like my number one priority, and so if I could fill all of Concow with a bunch of tiny homes, then we're going to.
Why don't you hit us one more time with the contact information so people can get connected, and thank you for being on the show.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, so they can always reach me by phone, 530-720-1199. Our email is campfiretinyhomes@gmail.com. And then on Facebook, you can find us at Tiny Homes for Campfire Survivors.
All righty, Alyssa. Hope to meet you someday soon.
Yes, I'll call you for our next house delivery.
I would love that. That warmed my heart.
90.1 KZFR reminding you, in this uncertain time, please consider the businesses that support community radio and provide employment for our friends, families, and neighbors. The coming months may decide their survival. If you need goods or services, a list of KZFR underwriters with links is available at kzfr.org. On the Underwriters tab. Together we'll grow a stronger community for all. If you'd like to be an underwriter on KZFR, you can call Ray Lager. That's 530-520-4742. Or email Ray at underwrite@kzfr.org. Thank you very much for all of your support. And underwriting is one way that businesses support KZFR. Let's help everyone out during this uncertain time. Thank you.
On Mother's Day 2020, I had the distinct pleasure of doing a ride-along and helped deliver food to the doorsteps of folks in Concow and Yankee Hill with Jesse Olson, a operations lead with Team Rubicon, an international non-government organization founded by U.S. Marines William McNulty and Jacob Jake Wood. Team Rubicon identifies itself as a veteran service organization that uses disaster response to help reintegrate veterans back into civilian life.
And this is the second ride-along I've done with Team Rubicon. And their Butte County operation has been going strong for about 4 or 5 weeks and is delivering, well, about 100 meals every single Monday and every single Thursday. One is non-perishable, which is the ride-along I did. And then once a week, they deliver perishable goods up into the Burns Car area in Butte County. What we're going to transition to right now is a wonderful interview that we have with one of the recipients of the non-perishable box, Rock House Karen, on location, Yankee Hill, Peepaw Radio. How important is it to have, you know, community members swinging on by, talking to you and giving you food?
Well, the food is nice, but getting to see people that I've missed since the fire. Actually, some of the donation centers up here closed, and I miss the people more than the donations. It was my go-to place to get hugs.
Yeah.
And now hugs are few and far between, but the question we get asked up here is, when was the last time you were in town? Mm-hmm. And if it was long enough ago, you might still get a hug.
There you go. I like that. It's very cool that you said that, because that's what I was saying to Jesse. It's, you know, it's important to give out the food, but a lot of people just like to talk to people and just connect with people and make them feel part of the community still.
Right. I'm trying to reopen the Rock House, and I decided I'd put it off until we can hang out. I'm not sure I'm going to do that. We might just have to open up and sell it, you know, to go for a while.
Maybe give us a little backstory on, you know, how you purchased the property and then what happened at the campfire and how things are faring here for the pandemic.
Oh, real quickly, we bought the place in 2014. Jesse and Craig were going to buy it before us, and I got all my pictures from Craig. there was a lot of fear and trepidation because there was no water, but we eventually found water, and we bought the system. So now we have a water-finding system. It's seismoelectric, and rebuilt the building and got it started and started feeding people and started having live music with local people who should be celebrities, some really great musicians all around.
Yeah.
And just got to love on families. And then the fire hit 5 years later, about the time we were just about finished getting the property all cleaned up and perfect. And it took down the big building. We had 9 structures altogether. 6 of them were burnt down, including my home, the workshop, all the tools. And so, yeah, devastation. But there was something here, so we came back and started planting flowers. And I'm thinking we've planted, I'm saying, close to 700-800 trees. Yeah. A lot of them are seedlings, so we're trying to make it work, trying to get it back. And I spend a lot of days just cutting down brush so that the seedlings can grow.
I think it's really poignant in a way that, you know, your burn scar still has that wonderful, all the rock work from the Rock House. It's almost like every time you pass by, you're like, gosh, it would be good to open that back up again.
I spent a good part of last year saving those rocks.
Yeah.
Getting cleanup was denied repeatedly until I could structurally, engineeringly prove that those walls were sound. And then I had to pay for the cleanup myself, which all the donations from the GoFundMe to keep the Rock House and rebuild went to just keeping it.
Uh-huh.
So we can't rebuild yet, but we have an engineer who's donated some time and energy into drawing up plans. And so we're going to figure this out, whether or not we can afford to do it. We'll at least figure it out. Maybe we'll run another GoFundMe or something. But we are going to get open, and we're going to be feeding people again. And soon enough, we'll be giving hugs and playing live music.
Any closing comments, Karen?
No, just God loves us. Even though it all burnt down, it didn't change anything.
You know what Terry said at IAM's Garden? She said, it's not about religion, it's about relationships.
That's true. Actually, I had a long talk with God about how come we couldn't get open.
Mm-hmm.
We've been struggling to get power for, 15 months. And he specifically told me it's not about the money.
Amen that. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
All right, Jesse Olson, thanks for your time driving down off the Upper Ridge back home in Chico. Why don't you let our listeners know the best way to get a hold of you to volunteer to do some operations with Team Rubicon?
Sure. They can contact me at Jesse, J-E-S-S-I-E dot Olson, O-L-S-O-N, at teamrubiconusa.org. Or they can call me at 530-268-5199.
Into the Without a Roof Radio program, and we're made possible. Generous contributions, KZFR supporters, and by Om Foods, with an organic, non-GMO, whole foods, some fish and dairy-free menu. Open 12 noon to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Their full menu is at iloveomfoods.com. For pickup orders only, social distancing required, and orders will be on the table with your name on them. Please wait outside till your order is ready. OM Foods thanks you for keeping the community safe. Details 530-965-5263. And also by Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured, with financing available. Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached at 518-0924. I hope you're enjoying this program half as much as I am. And if you're so inclined, please jump on out to kzfr.org. Click tip, leave something in the jar. All right, Guillermo Mash for KZFR 90.1 FM. Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, folks, that are listening to this pre-record. And I'm really happy to have Jenny Lowry, founder of From the Ground Up, from her Concow home. Welcome to KZFR, Jenny Lowry.
Hi, thank you.
Now, today we're going to be following up on the story about the organic CSA food giveaways that happen Wednesdays and Saturdays at the hardware store in Yankee Hill. But Jenny's going to help, you know, as a longtime member of the community up here on the Upper Ridge, just to give our listeners some understanding of how dire the need is and the need for food and fresh food up on the ridge during these times.
The need is pretty substantial. Hasn't been a lot of progress since the fire. It is still very basic. There's so many people in RVs, in cars, in tents, still living on generators and propane. The needs are real basic. All of their home gardens burn. They have no power. They have no water. They don't really have proper soil yet to even grow their own food. Mm-hmm. So food is a critical need up on the mountain right now. And Pam, oh my gosh, I can't say enough about Pam and her group, what they've done. It's brought fresh food, and just look through Facebook and you can see the amazing, grateful comments. Food is critical. Food is health. These people are at risk to begin with. Since the fire, they don't have proper living conditions. Very, very little construction has been able to happen in Concow. There are no resources. There are no stores. There's nothing available except what these generous farmers and other programs are gathering and bringing up the hill.
Yeah, I thought it was even a nice gesture from the Dome store. They have that big sign that said all garden supplies at cost, you know, so that's how they're kind of giving back. They're not making any money on it. They're trying to help folks get fresh food and grow their own food up here in the ridge.
That's how critical it is, Bill. The soil is tainted from toxic fire. Have they been able to bring in proper soil? Where do we even get clean, safe soil? Hopefully it's, you know, from out of the area, unless you can afford to test it. It's critical to the growth of the food. They need water. They need seeds. They need starts. They need everything. They don't have a rake, a shovel, a hoe left. Just basically starting from scratch. And food is about as basic as it gets. If you don't have healthy food, what do you do from there?
Yeah, and food is also a good bridge maker. You know, it's just nice to see. We spent about 45 minutes just, you know, talking with folks at the Saturday food giveaway at the hardware store. It's just community members helping one another. It was some nice conversation, and everyone was so appreciative of what was going on. Yeah, I'm here at the Yankee Hill Hardware Store, and I'm speaking with, what's your name, sir?
Steve Miller.
Steve, it's a pleasure to meet you. Why don't you just give our listeners in the KZFR listening area an understanding of all the good work that goes on here as far as helping to provide food for the community?
Well, there's been a lot of nonprofits bring nice organic foods on Wednesday and Saturdays. The Yankee Fire Council has a grant for vouchers that supports the Dome Store, Jake's Burger, and our hardware store. There's been food trucks show up. It's, a lot of people have really done a lot to help.
They asked me if people in Concow are hungry, and yeah. I said, yes. Everything.
Are hungry.
Yeah, everybody always wants food, it seems like. Yeah. So
So Amelia's getting set up right now, so.
Well, maybe some pickled carrots are coming in my.
Pickled carrots. How many weeks you been doing this now?
I think that this is my third or fourth week, and Pam did it for a couple weeks before that.
And she has a driver come up. It looks like they've been here. Is the grub people have been here?
So far, it's been the same guy always comes.
Philippe.
Yep, Philippe, yep. He's been our dedicated driver.
Yeah.
And he comes and drops off, and I give the old boxes back and get the new boxes full of veggies. And hey, Terry. There's, look, we have boxes and boxes and boxes. Please.
Like carrots.
Yeah. Baby carrots.
I eat them.
You'll eat them?
Onions.
Yeah, yeah. We got red and white. Red and white. You like onions, I can tell.
These ones are a different donation. These are not probably organic. I don't think it says
they're
that.
Not. They're from Mexico.
But they're probably delicious. Yeah. My kids fight over these. Last time I got them, they said.
Those turnips?
Yeah, they're called supper turnips.
Those are really good turnips.
Oh, yeah. They're like sweet.
You're going to fight over something. That's a good thing to fight over.
Theirs is bigger than mine. And, you know, stuff like that. Oh, excuse me. Hello. Yeah. Okay.
And then what do you got going on over here? Another wonderful community member just brings stuff from some of the local stores. Now we got cantaloupe and tomatoes.
Yep. She takes some surplus food that she has arranged on her own personal level. And so she basically is a personal donator to me.
Thank you, Amelia.
Yeah.
Any other things we need to know, Jenny, before we let you go?
Just to let everyone know that somebody goes by Kent Field Garden every Wednesday and Saturday as their last check before they go up to Concow. So that gives you a secondary drop-off spot for anybody that has extras, anybody that wants to donate plant starts, or anything that they want to send to Concow. Can be delivered to Kent Field Gardens at 1125 Kent Field Road, and just let somebody know it's there and that it is intended for Concow, and they pick it up and up it goes.
Maybe end with a message of hope. Jenny, what would you say to our listeners?
All I have to do is talk to the people in Concow, and they're full of hope. They're full of hope. There's donations of fruit trees coming in from Hodges Nursery. There's donations coming in from everybody. There's, you know, so many people that are involved. It's pretty spectacular. Pam and her group couldn't have done this project without them. Mm-hmm. I give all the credit to them. Bruce, what would I do without Bruce helping me through all of this? Our family, our friends. We have to do this, Bill. We have to. These are our families and friends. This is our community.
You know, the only thing I'll add is I've had a wonderful interview that'll be airing in the show with John and Terry from IAMS, but they had this wonderful comment that really kind of solidified everything for me. Jenny, she said, it's not about religion, it's about relationships.
Yes.
And I just love that.
Yes, and anything that was broken before the fire has been cleansed. Everything's okay, and we're all starting over, and it's brought this community back together. It's a healing process, and I think that they're full of hope.
Lotta Roof here, signing off for this week's program with a message of hope from Karen and my new signature song, Tub Thumpin'. And until next week, if you have a roof, be grateful. Can you give our listeners a message of hope, Karen? Rock House Karen.
You know, this is all temporary. Everything you go through in life is temporary. It's all going to move on to the next thing. It wasn't going to be the same anyway. And it won't be the same. But even before the fire, it wasn't going to be the same because things change every year. So you just got to keep moving forward and looking for the new changes.
What I thought was cool is you started saying that the motorcycle was in the background. It swung by and it left and it changed.
It changed, yep. Yeah.
Thank you, Karen.
There's always hope.